This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Dipen Sinha. He is in the Materials, Physics, and Applications Division at Los Alamos National Laboratory. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So we're going to talk about, among other things, acoustics, which is one of the areas in which you work, and its applications. And I thought before we start talking about the applications of acoustic science, maybe we could just talk a little bit about the nature of sound. I mean, you know, we are living in this world where we're, most of us, hearing and seeing, and there's an electromagnetic spectrum that a lot of people are familiar with, where there's this tiny little band of visible light, and the rest is not visible, but gives us everything from X-rays to radio waves and so on. Is there a similar spectrum in acoustics, a spectrum of vibration where part of it is audible to us and
yes,
the rest isn't?
That's absolutely correct. Acoustics is the science of sound. But by sound, usually we talk about the sound we can hear. But there's a whole world beyond that. I mean, it could go from infrasound to very, very high frequency or ultrasound to almost gigahertz, which is billion times a second something vibrates. Sound is essentially a pressure wave or vibration. Even if we can't hear something, doesn't mean it's not generating sound. Because anything that moves back and forth very fast will emit sound. It can propagate through liquid, gases, and even a solid. And so you can use that nature of sound to really investigate things, the nature of materials. And sound is all pervasive. We live in a world filled with sound. I mean, just like in this cafe, you can hear sound all around you.
Sometimes a little too much.
Yeah, so indeed it has a spectrum just like light. So it goes from infrasound, for instance, elephants. So there are some animals, they communicate at a very, very low frequency that humans cannot hear.
So infrasound, kind of like when people say infrared.
Yes,
or ultrasound,
exactly.
Ultraviolet.
It's the same kind of a terminology.
Yeah.
And these are very, very low frequency vibrations. And so some animals can hear all that. And humans can hear certain range. And then other animals, dogs and other, can hear way beyond the human range. Bats, for instance, communicate through ultrasound. So anything we cannot hear above our hearing range is called ultrasound. But the science of vibration and sound extends way beyond that. It goes all the way to gigahertz, which is almost billion times a second if something vibrates, compared to when you are on it talking, it's in the order of a few thousand times a second. So that's the difference. But a lot of people think the word acoustics means just sound of music or anything. It's
right.
Really goes way beyond that. That's just a very small part of the spectrum, as you pointed out.
So what are the limitations of sound? I mean, you've alluded to this when you talk about pressure and the media through which sound moves. But I mean, like, light can come to us from distant stars.
Mm-hmm.
But sound, I mean, is there sound out in space?
Okay, now that's an interesting question. I'm glad you asked that, because for sound to propagate or travel through, it needs a medium. For instance, I'm talking to you, the medium is air, because as I'm saying the words, the air molecules vibrating in front of me, and that then moves along as a wave. But not the molecules themselves, but it just goes back and forth, it hits the next one, and that's a wave propagates, it hits your eardrums and you can hear. So in this case, it's the air is the medium, but it can go through water, like your sonars would work underwater, then in solids. Anything you tap, you can hear the sound if you put your ear next to the table. Interestingly, you mentioned about stars. you can also hear the stars, but not through the sound it generates, but how it vibrates. You can look at optically the various fluctuations in the light, and from that you can convert the information into vibration of the stars. You can literally listen to the music of the stars that way. And
is it really sound?
Well, it's vibration. Sound and vibration are the same thing.
But I mean, light is also vibration.
Yeah, but what happens when the something vibrates, then there's a light from that also fluctuates to the same kind of frequency. So if you observe that vibration, the fluctuations, you can then figure out how that object is vibrating. So that's how scientists can listen to the music of the stars.
Do you do that?
I personally don't do it, but others do that. And they can learn a lot about the size and the age of the stars and various things from that.
Now, could you maybe tell us a little bit about acoustic science? Like, how were sound waves discovered?
Well, it's hard to tell how it was discovered. From the very first human being, I'm sure they were communicating with some kind of noise or sound or vocalization.
But they didn't necessarily know that there was a wave pattern.
No, they didn't know. That's probably a little more modern, but it still probably goes way hundreds and hundreds of years ago. People knew that something is propagating. I cannot honestly tell you the first person who may have discovered that, because this is the science of sound probably originated many hundreds of years ago.
And how have advances in technology and mathematics advanced the study of acoustics?
Yes, that's what really happened more recently. For instance, many people are used to having an ultrasound imaging done, or like fetal monitoring and those things. They use very high frequency sound. But that requires, yes, some math and physics and those sort of things. But it's, again, taking advantage of sound travels through a medium. In this case, your human body. When sound propagates through a medium or travels through a medium, the medium affects how the sound propagates. If something's very dense, then it affects how sound propagates, how sound loses energy in there. So by studying those things, and as a function of frequency, as you go from a low frequency to high frequency, the behavior is very different. And so that's how you can use sound as a probe for characterizing material or learning something about the material, how it allows sound to propagate through it and how vibrations go through it. So that's what we usually do to take advantage of that and build various kind of sensors.
So sensors that use sound, what are some examples of these kinds of sensors? What do they do?
Well, in the beginning, what I did, it was more of a national security related. It started in the first Gulf War, when there was a need to find out what various kind of munitions, like chemical munition, artillery shells, and various kind of shapes and sizes, what did they contain? Did they really have extremely toxic chemicals like nerve agents and various things? And the only way, as those days, people could do it is drill a hole, take out a sample, send it to the laboratory, and then figure out what that chemical was. And so if one did that to verify all these hundreds and thousands of munitions in the stockpile of various countries, would have taken more than 500 years. But sound has a unique property. It can travel through anything. With even a metal casing, it'll go through. So that's what I use to take advantage of sound, to go through a sealed container, interact with the fluid inside or the material inside, and then come back as a reflected signal. And by analyzing that, I could tell what the chemical was. So in a matter of seconds, I could identify chemicals inside sealed containers. So that's how I got involved in the study of the physics of sound.
So every chemical inside of a container, as you're talking about, absorbs and reflects sound in a different way.
Yeah, and allows it to propagate. It's like how fast sound will go through water versus for the same frequency or vibration of sound through water versus alcohol versus wine is different.
Mm-hmm.
How much sound will get absorbed by traveling a certain distance by these different liquids is different. So by just observing that, you can extract from that the various physical properties of the material or the liquid, like there's density, sound speed, sound absorption characteristics as a function of frequencies, viscosity, how viscous the material is. Once you know that, you can pretty much identify a chemical based on those properties.
It's surprising and almost counterintuitive that you could get results that are so fine-grained from sound. I mean, could you tell the difference between grape juice and wine?
Yes. Even whether it's a good wine or bad wine or spoiled wine, I could even probably tell you the different brands of drinking water in a bottle and identify them. And I'll give you an example how this works. Suppose you're trying to identify a person in a crowd, and you tell somebody, look for a person who's 6 feet tall. Now, there would be quite a few of them. But suppose you say, okay, 6 feet tall, but wears glasses. Now, it comes down to a less number of candidates possible. Then you say, 6 feet tall, wearing red shirt, and wearing glasses and dark hair. Now, you've really narrowed down your choices. So the same way, once we have multiple properties like density, viscosity, sound speed, sound absorption, various physical aspects of the liquid identified, then we can really tell what chemical or liquid has those properties, and that's how we identify them.
We're talking to Dipen Sinha of Los Alamos National Laboratory about acoustics and the applications of acoustics. So that's one example of a sensor that was for national security, military purposes. What are some other ways in which a sensor like that would be used for non-military applications?
Well, one of the examples I can give you is the work I had done in the energy sector. Again, it's in an oil exploration. How much oil or water and gas that comes out of a well? It's a very important thing for the companies who produce it. They need to know because they can figure out how good the reservoir is or whatever. But right now, there are not that many techniques available to really do that. There are very expensive equipment. So that's another place where I use this technique to use the same kind of method that I use for chemical weapons to identify in real time how much of oil is flowing out of a well, and how much water, how much gas, and the volume and the speed and various things. And so that's one of the applications that's non-related to defense. It also has applications in medicine.
Now hang on, with this flowing out of a well business, if you use acoustic sensors and there's 10 different compounds in there, 10 different elements or things in that liquid, the sensors can pull them apart and say you've got this, 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 that, and that?
Typically, that's not the issue in real life. The companies that produce the manufacturer or really production companies, they mainly want to know the volume, how much oil they're producing. There are only a few varieties of oil. It's not the chemical composition of the oil they're interested in. They're mainly interested in the quantity and the rate they're being produced and how the reservoir is gradually depleting. I mean, instead of oil, there's more water coming out. And some wells can turn into water wells eventually. And how much gas. So figuring out a way to real-time and continuously monitoring it, because there are maybe tens of thousands of wells in a reservoir area. And not every well is producing the same amount. And usually they bundle everything up in one place and just look at the total. And they have no way to tell individual wells how much they're producing. They can shut it off if they're not really producing enough. So building a very cheap instrument based on acoustics that gives them that ability to monitor individual wells is a huge thing.
Now, you were, I think, starting to mention that there were some medical applications.
Yes. As I mentioned, sound can penetrate almost any object.
Yeah, we know about our ultrasound
tests. Exactly. So one of the things I'm really interested in is looking at intracranial pressure, the pressure inside the head. I mean, if there is a really trauma, of head trauma or injury, or there are certain diseases that changes the pressure inside the brain. And currently the main technique that's used is to drill a hole to the skull and insert a catheter and then monitor the pressure inside the brain. And as you can tell, it's a very risky surgery.
Yeah.
It requires hospitalization, the risk of infection, damaging brain tissues. So I came up with an idea how one can really do it with just sound. But looking at the vibration of the skull, how it vibrates, because if the pressure inside the brain or the skull changes, you can see the change in the vibration of the skull. And it turned out a very sensitive technique. There are other ways to look at the brain itself. If you could stimulate the brain, various neurological diseases, Alzheimer's disease, your Parkinson's disease, and there's a whole, even obsessive compulsive diseases, and any kind of neurological conditions, they all originate at different parts of the brain, deep in the brain. And recently what people have found out that if you could insert a needle to the exact this location and electrically stimulate them, you can really help these conditions to really become in control. And especially the Parkinson's disease is stunning. I mean, if you see surgeries or anything in the TV shows, you can recently I noticed that they showed that. It's pretty dramatic. But again, it's the same thing. You have to drill a hole through the skull, insert a catheter and whatever. So I'm trying to work on a way how to really put sound, focus sound, and those areas and stimulate with sound. And this has been shown that neurons can be stimulated with sound itself to produce similar results that the electrical signals do. So if this works out, then one can have a relatively simple, inexpensive, and risk-free way of treating a whole range of neurological disorders.
So that becomes very interesting because it's not only sensing and monitoring, but it's actually treating the disease.
Yes.
Now, are you at the point where you can pinpoint sound so that you are stimulating only that part of the brain and not everything in between?
Well, that is the main research is involved, because your question is a very good one, because it's not a very simple thing to do. And we have developed a technique. Normally what happens, if you try to put high-frequency sound that you can focus, it doesn't penetrate the skull. So we have come up with a way how you can collimate the beam of sound, although it's lower frequency, more in the hundreds of kilohertz instead of megahertz that's used in medical applications. But it will propagate, go straight to the skull without any hindrance and go deep into the brain. So that's what we have developed and working on. And your idea that you're talking about, how can we focus at a point, and that's what we're working on. But it probably uses not just a single beam, but multiple beams. So that wherever they intersect, that's the point that one wants to stimulate.
Now, why do you have to go through the skull? I mean, what if you were to focus your beams starting right under the skull in the back of the head, for
you
example?
You can. There are certain parts of the brain you can reach from the bottom, but many parts are really not accessible that way.
So you have to go to the closest point?
I mean, your question is a good one. There may be possibilities, various things, whether can you go through the ear or whatever.
Yeah.
It really needs to be studied, and I don't have all the answers at this stage.
Yeah.
But another thing I should point out, sound not only just travels through a medium and I can tell what the medium is, I can actually move things with sound. Because sound, again, is a pressure wave. So I can move particles and small objects with sound. I can create artificial materials. I can create new materials just by moving particles with sound and arranging them in a crystalline structure. And I can separate oil from water with sound. And instead of gravitationally letting it separate, I can just almost instantly things just separate out. So it's the manipulating objects and separating object and concentrating various biological cells and various things is also possible with sound.
We're talking to Dipen Sinha about acoustics. Now, when you are doing, for example, the biomedical research, is this all done at Los Alamos National Laboratory, or are you collaborating with other medical institutions?
In the past, I have worked with medical neurosurgeons and hospitals, and more. Right now, I'm working with, actually in the process of negotiating and getting started with various hospitals and neurosurgeons to do that, because I can develop a lot of the instruments and the physics and various things in the lab, and that's what I have done. But the ultimate test is actually clinical studies to see how things work. So we're kind of ways off from that. That will take some time.
Rat brains and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen at Los Alamos itself. It'll be done on a hospital under the care of the proper trained personnel and the doctors, medical doctors.
Well, you'd probably go through animal studies first, wouldn't you?
Even animal studies, I cannot do it in my lab. And as far as I know, even the lab doesn't have that capability, excepting maybe mice. And not a lot of the times that animal models, such as the mice and everything, really give you the answer that one needs, this kind of deep brain stimulations and various things. It's probably much better to go to larger animals or actually humans.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. So let's talk about sound from another perspective, which is, for example, in the electromagnetic spectrum, the very high frequency light, way beyond visible light, can damage the human body. Too much X-rays or gamma rays, things like that, ionizing radiation, it's bad for you. What about sound? Are there any sound frequencies that are damaging?
Absolutely. But everything that you normally ever come across, it's not damaging or unsafe. But if you listen to music even very loud, that'll damage your eardrums. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And high-frequency sound also, if you increase the intensity, maybe 1,000-fold to 1,000,000-fold, yes, it will rupture blood vessels and stuff. But again, those are needs to be almost 1,000,000 times larger, greater in intensity than normally any kind of medical studies or imaging is done. So it's pretty safe.
Are there any sounds in nature that are damaging, or are they all like human-caused, like putting your music too loud and stuff like that?
Well, if you a loud thunderclap can damage your ears, or very loud sounds from some factories or explosions can, of course, affect your hearing.
Right, right. Just as there are some sounds that can hurt you, hurt your eardrums, whatever, are there frequencies that can actually heal the body? I mean, you were talking about the brain before.
Yes, but again, that's a different area of science that I'm not really involved in. I mean, you know, in Parkinson's disease, probably, even listening to classical music, the certain beats, people have found very helpful. And actually, there is therapy, music therapy, for many various things. Meditation, you know, a lot of people chant and whatever. I mean, it's kind of going off topic of physics itself, but the thing is, people do notice a lot of real calmness, and it can help the brain, how the brain waves may interact with them. You can, if you're wearing a headphone, if you put music or sound of different frequencies differently from one ear to the other one, and the brain interprets it somewhat differently, and it can help. But again, I'm not personally involved in any of those, but I can see various ways how it can have a healing effect in many ways. Music has been used for healing for thousands of years, and most people find various kind of music very soothing. So it does help you in many ways, psychologically, and again, anything you affects the brain, it also affects your body in one way or the other. So it is definitely possible.
How do you envision the next, or what are some of your hopes and dreams for the next generation of medicine where acoustic medicine is concerned? Like, what's the farthest out, you know, hope that you have or thinking about?
For instance, I mentioned about being able to move small particles and various things with sound. You can use sound in that way. You can direct medicine or embedded in nanoparticles and various things. So when you inject, you can move selectively to the tumors for cancer and various things. Could it be in brain, in the body, in different places? So you can have more targeted treatment. You can also send medicine in tiny droplets, minuscule bubbles sort of thing wrapped around. And with sound, you can burst them in the region you want it. So you can have a very targeted medicine to the tumor instead of just flooding the whole body with the medicine.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Because right now, you do chemotherapy, okay? You inject in the body, and so it goes into your bloodstream from head to toe. But all you're trying to do is target a particular tumor, be it in breast or a brain or wherever. So these are some things definitely will be possible. Actually, people are working on it right now. And the next few years, you will see those things. And then combining different branches of physics, whether you apply light on top of sound, you can have a magnetic field, electric field, you combine various things. And it'd be hard to even predict what you will see in the next few years. There'll be amazing things you will hear coming out in medicine.
Does your work as a physicist involved in acoustics, has that made you more sensitive to the sound in your everyday environment?
Well, not as sensitive, but I do pay attention to different things that normally I probably didn't. And, of course, the dangers of very loud sound and everything. And as I grow older, I know hearing goes down by itself. I don't want to make it any worse by listening to loud sounds or be in such an environment.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Dipen Sinha is in the Materials, Physics, and Applications Division at Los Alamos National Laboratory. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.